News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
On News Talk.
Now by Tánaiste Micheál Martin. Good morning to you, Tánaiste. A lot to get through with you this morning. I'm going to start with you on migration. 40 tents currently on the Grand Canal. Is this just how it's going to be for Dubliners going forward?
No. I think we have a very serious, challenging situation of that. There is no doubt. It's unprecedented. If you think what's happened over the last 3 years, you think the Ukrainian war and the dramatic increase in global migration, I think you're looking at up to 140,000 people have come into the country as a result of those seeking asylum and those under the temporary directive, those coming from Ukraine. Now, that has been fluid and quite a number of Ukrainians have left since, but the asylum-seeking phenomenon is growing and that has created pressure on our accommodation system. But we are, through the designation of safe countries and through faster processing of applications, we are getting through through many much faster and making decisions much faster. And then there's the accommodation side, and we will have to develop more state-owned sites for temporary accommodation.
Is there a kind of a contradiction in terms, though, the state, the government, are funding NGOs who are handing out tents and telling people where it might be a good idea for them to pitch those tents, and then within days sometimes of that happening, the state is going in and paying other people and funding other people to clear up those tents and move them on. Would it not be more sensible to have something like a system of buses bringing people to organised centres that are perhaps tented? Because that's I respect that that's where we're at the moment. But the idea that we're giving out the tents through funding from government and then taking away the tents within, you could be 24 hours, it seems to make no sense to me.
There is a conflict and there's a problem there, in my view. I acknowledge
we
that.
We need to stop giving out tents.
Because my own view, tents are not a good idea anyway. I witnessed that during the home, you know, during different phases of homelessness, where many established homeless organisations were not in favour of the giving out of tents to homeless because it led to other challenges.
Yeah, and enabling the
and
idea of
safety issues as well. It was actually unsafe. And there was a fundamental issue of lack of sanitation and safety around the pitching of tents in any kind of location within a city or a town. The short-term solution is the securing of significant state-owned site where we can facilitate proper tents with proper sanitation and basic supplies. And that is what we have been doing. But we're going to have to create more, because the numbers that have come in the first 3 months at the moment is nearly double what came in the last 3 months last year.
Do we need to stop giving out tents in the city centre?
Well, I think, again, people look in respect of non-governmental organisations, they operate to their own ethos and so on. But I do think we need to engage with them in relation to the practice.
Yeah, but we're funding them.
Yeah, in relation to their practice, I think there's a fundamental problem there that we do have to address. And I think we will do that in consultation with
them. So there is an issue around giving out tents in the first place.
I believe there is, yes. Okay. Yeah.
You mentioned Ukrainians and you were saying that Ukrainians have left. Obviously, a big news this week was the change in the subsidies for Ukrainians, for those within sponsored accommodation, that it would be cut from what was essentially like job seekers allowance down to the €39 or the €29 if they are children. What's that going to mean in terms of if you are in the equivalent of sponsored accommodation as a Ukrainian mother, maybe, or a couple of kids? You're 90 days in, your accommodation is no longer going to be provided. What happens then? Do you go back up to job seekers? What's going to happen in pragmatic terms to Ukrainians who are here in this situation?
Well, the latest measure is in respect of those who are already in state-provided serviced accommodation.
Sure.
And by that we mean full meals and board.
Yeah, so they've no bills.
No bills. And you have your meals and so forth.
I accept that. But what happens when the 90 days is up? Are they allowed to stay in the accommodation, or are they going to be moved on?
They'll be moved on after the 90 days.
So they get more money.
That's
at that
in respect
point?
No, of the newly arrived.
It's complex, isn't it? There's an awful lot of different.
Layers. There's far lesser numbers who arrived in since the measures were brought in respect of newly arrived. What is interesting with the Ukrainian situation, it has been very fluid, and perhaps what was not more widely known is the fact that we had welcomed in about 106,000 Ukrainians since the beginning of the war. That number is down to about 83,000 to 86,000.
It's quite a big
right
drop
now, and that's a big drop, which perhaps wasn't widely.
But if you are
which
newly arrived,
which I think illustrates the fluidity of what's happening within the Ukrainian situation. Many are finding work here, by the way, and there are thousands of Ukrainians working in the country, and that's important. But there will be, and I think we will be conscious of mothers, children who may not be in a position to work.
For someone who's newly arrived, for someone who arrived 80 days ago and has 10 days left before they're no longer going to be offered accommodation and now they're being cut, what happens to them when the 90 days is up in the serviced accommodation? Do they go back up in terms of the money that they get?
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole idea of the 90 days is to give people opportunities to try and integrate into either employment or into other accommodation.
Okay. So after the 90 days, they will get more money. That's going to go back up.
Yeah, the cuts apply to those in service accommodation or in.
So they'll move on and do that. Moving on, I know you're going to the Lebanon this weekend.
Yes, we're
moving on to the Middle East. Today is Nakba Day, which is obviously a very significant day for the Palestinian people. Are we going to be recognising Palestine as a state on the 21st of May?
Well, we will be recognising the state of Palestine before the end of the month. The specific date is still fluid because we're still in discussions with some countries in respect of a joint recognition of a Palestinian state, and that'll become clear in the next few days as to the specific date, but it certainly will be before the end of this month, and I will have further consultations today with some foreign ministers in respect of the final specific detail of this, and we're doing it in the context of the Arab Peace Initiative, the track towards two-state solution, and to send a signal to the Palestinian population at large that we support their right to self-determination and the idea of a two-state solution as the ultimate only way that Israelis and Palestinians can live side by side in peace.
And you mentioned sending a sign to the Palestinians. As I said, today is Nakba Day, a day that's very important to the Palestinians, the catastrophe. There was calls to fly the Palestinian flag over Leinster House today. Would you have supported that?
I'm not as focused on flags and emblems, to be frank, in terms of public buildings. It's never been, because I've seen what happened in Northern Ireland when that started. I mean, this week alone, there are two significant days that reflect the complexity of the Middle Eastern and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. You had Israeli Independence Day on the 14th and Nakba Day on the 15th of May. And that, you know, goes back right to the origins of this complex conflict.
I think
what is important here is that I think we focus on the substantive issues of an immediate ceasefire. It is quite shocking that Israel is moving into Rafah, and there is now a military operation underway in Rafah. The suffering is immense. The death and destruction is immense. And people wanted to stop, and the international community wanted to stop. Well, I believe Israel is
The oblivious. Americans have authorised a €1 billion package of funding in the last 24 hours for Israel for arms. What do you say about that?
I think the United States should not be funding at this particular point. I know that there have been a pullback in respect of other armaments.
But that's current. That's in the past 24 hours.
And I think there's the broader situation between Iran, Israel and the wider geopolitical situation in the region, which is why and which is a serves as a backdrop to that. But I don't think any...
Will you be meeting...
In my view, a very clear signals have to be sent to Israel, which they have been sent
by
everybody.
Will you be meeting any Israeli representatives when you're in Lebanon?
No. I'm going to meet our own soldiers and defence forces who are working in very, very difficult circumstances there. And I'll also be meeting with Lebanese ministers in respect of ensuring that there's progress in respect of the case in relation to the murder of Sean Rooney, which we're not happy with the progress in relation to the conduct of that case and how long that is going on, and also in respect of ensuring safety and force protection for our own troops.
You mentioned our own troops. I'm glad you did, because I wanted to talk to you about the fact that the High Court has said that the ban on them being allowed to protest or organise in terms of industrial relations or those types of things is a contravention of their human rights. Is that going to change everything for the Defence Forces? They're often seen as this sort of Cinderella of the public service, that they don't seem to get the same crack of the whip in terms of workers' rights that other members of public service
do. Well, that's no longer the case in terms of... I think we need to stop using that language from here on in, because the starting pay for most recruits now is higher than comparably in most of the public service, in many areas of the public service. I mean, if you come out of college in 18 months and you're commissioned as a cadet, you're in your 40,000s starting out. If you're a leaving certificate and you come out and you're a cadet within 18 months, you're on 41, 42,000. And in terms of the enlisted,
can you
very
see
strong
them,
no, it's important we make this point because it doesn't get said enough.
Can you see the government allowing them
to
strike?
And then I'm going to make the point that we have free private healthcare for all enlisted members now in the Defence Forces. It needed to improve, by the way. I accept that point, and it has to improve, and we're doing that. On the issue of I don't believe the people are looking for the right to strike, and I think that would be, we've had a good, if you look at the evolution of the Defence Forces,
they would suggest they're being silenced.
Loyalty to the state is important irrespective of who's in government, and we don't want the politicisation of our Defence Forces. On the other hand, and I'm bring it through legislation which will be recognising an association with ICTU, for example, on behalf of the Defence Forces, PD4 and RACO. That's important.
Okay.
That's progress. And and we will examine the judgment, 92-page judgment, a lot of implications. We'll examine that and we'll engage with the organisations.
Maybe lastly, Thornish, I want to get on to what I think are genuinely shocking statistics about the abuse of politicians. 94% of politicians. And this is quite a big survey of people, senators and TDs. A quarter of them answered the survey and 94% of them have suffered intimidation, threats, abuse, or in some cases, actual violence. What is going on in our political system and what needs to be done or needs to be changed? Jennifer Carroll McNeill was saying she says she can see a time when a politician is murdered in this country, which is a dreadful thing to actually hear a mainstream politician say.
Yeah, first of all, I want to say that the vast, vast majority of the Irish people are courteous, kind and nice to their politicians. That needs to be said. I've been out in the last number of days and it's been quite pleasant canvassing and knocking on doors. And many people actually don't like what's happening now in respect of a certain group. And we had some of them outside James Lawless's house last night in Kildare. There was a protest from far-right activists outside his house, which was distressing to his family in particular. And it's the nature of the aggression of some protesters, foul language, intimidatory language, that is causing a lot of concern. Where you can have isolated instances, if you're walking down a particular street, there might be one or two elements confront in an aggressive manner politicians now. And I think there is a real concern out there in terms of what is a relatively newer phenomenon, although we had it before. And I think you'll get it both on the far right and you'll get it in elements of the far left as well around particular protests. And, I remember what happened to Joan Burton, for example, the late minister, and people tend to forget
And I would suggest that that's when everything seemed to shift in terms of what was considered acceptable. But can I just say 67% of the abuse they're getting is around migration and 47% apparently of the abuse they're getting is around women's rights. What does that say about Irish people, that were racist and misogynist?
There's a new element emerging that is very, very intolerant of any discussion around women's rights at all. There's this kind of a new trend that I see it on social media. That doesn't seem to allow space for discussion anymore. You're either on one particular track of mindset
or
another.
Do we need any new laws to protect politicians?
I think we need, I would favour legislation to prevent protests outside residences of politicians and political representatives. I think that would be a start and we have to draw a line. No problem protesting outside offices, although our staff are very worried. I mean, my main concern is my staff, our people who work with me in the constituency office. They're on the front line meeting people all of the time, helping people. And there's a vulnerability there. And that does concern me. So we do have to look at the legislative protection for politicians. And I think we could start with stopping protests outside people's homes.
Thornish, the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Micheál Martin, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR
on News Talk.